Coming up on Tech News Today, Google becomes the most valuable publicly traded company today. What to expect when the Hyperloop is a real thing. Microsoft's cloud meets the ocean in the bizarre, bizarre world of drone boarding. All that next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1440, recorded Monday, February 1st, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by NatureBox. NatureBox is dedicated to making smart, delicious snacking easy. They have over 100 ridiculously delicious snacks that get delivered directly to your doorstep. Visit naturebox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now.
And by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at freshbooks.com/TNT.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about technology, all the news of the day with journalists, podcasters, people who love technology.
Pretty much. Who are you?
I am Megan Maroney.
And I am Jason Howell. Sorry, I was out on Friday, and so I forgot what your name was, and I had to ask. I apologize.
Yeah, you were out, and I realized, like, I had to start the show by myself, and I didn't exactly know where to start, because that's always your job. Like, yeah, I was like, when do I begin? It was very frightening.
You noticed how many times your initials were in the doc? Yeah. To let you know what parts you were talking about.
Yes, but I'm still Megan Maroney. I survived.
Excellent. You. Good. Mm-hmm. And you're stronger for it.
Yes.
Our guest today is awesome. It's Omar Gayaga. He's the tech culture writer at the Austin American-Statesman, as well as co-host of Statesman Shots, which is a weekly podcast. You're familiar with the podcast thing. It's great to have you here, Omar.
Absolutely. Love podcasting. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Right on. Tell us a little bit about the show that you do, the podcast that you do.
It is really kind of a pop culture show about kind of Austin life. So just, we have people on who are doing interesting stuff in arts, film, technology, you know, just any pop culture that appeals to Austinites.
Nice. Excellent.
Austin and, Samba.
Yeah, and go. So, and you were telling us before the show, but who's the big get for this next episode?
This next week we have Wiley Wiggins on, who you may remember from Dazed and Confused. He is now sort of looms large in the Austin indie gaming scene. He is one of the guys behind Juegos Rancheros, which is a monthly, and Fantastic Arcade, which is part of Fantastic Fest, happens every September, big showcase for indie gaming. So yeah, he's a really good guy. We had a great conversation with him about games, filmmaking. He's just a very, very cool character.
That's awesome. So it's the Statesman Shots
Statesman podcast. Shots, yep.
Excellent. All right, everybody, check that out. But before you check that out, you know, like, watch this show. Yeah. And then
stay
check
here.
It. Yeah. Stay here for the next hour, then go watch the show. So earnings, schmearnings, but today it's kind of a different story. Alphabet's earnings report today is a little different from the rest. It's the company's first earnings call to break out revenue and expenses from its core business and all the other bets, a.k.a. its moonshots. So kind of starting with the usual suspects here, Q4 revenue, $21.32 billion. That's beating expectations of $20.77 billion. So they beat expectations pretty significantly there. Revenue up 18% year over year. Ad revenue up 17% year over year at $16.3 billion. And, you know, obviously that's it, just a gigantic driver of Google's revenue always. And then you take a look at the moonshots, which is kind of what we're starting to see as far as what that means to the greater, you know, piece of the puzzle of Alphabet. Lost $3.6 billion last year. Things like self-driving cars, Project Loon, you know, all those things are kind of included and so much more in there. $1.9 billion loss the year before. So almost twice as much as far as that's concerned. Well, maybe a little bit more than twice as much. But generated $448 million in 2015. So the big picture, basically, as far as the moonshots are concerned, is yes, they're taking losses, but they're doing that because it's very experimental and they have all this ad stuff and YouTube and all these other moneymakers that are kind of helping fund that.
But it's interesting to, because I mean, that's what everyone wants to know. Like, how much is Google's core business worth versus how much is all this other stuff that they do? And this is the first time they've reported earnings since they've become Alphabet, which is also interesting. And now I guess they're the most valuable publicly traded company in the world. I wanted to like wear a little crown and hand it over to Jason.
I'm not Apple. Google. Don't have to hand it to me, but I'll accept your crown anytime.
Omar, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because no matter how well Google does in its core businesses, you know, if you're on Twitter, you will always find people grumbling about, oh, well, this must mean that everything else about them sucks. so you see a lot of that today. But yeah, I mean, I'm not my background is not in, you know, knowing what it meant at the time for Alphabet to split off. But yeah, it seems like what Google's doing is paying off. And, you know, clearly, if you can say, you know, we're actually worth more than Apple, maybe just for a few hours, you're doing something right.
Yeah, that's based on the stock price now. It surged, I think, upwards of 8% in after-hours trading after this was announced. And then I think it's kind of settled down right around 6%. So based on that number, Google is pretty, it's worth more. What is it? $569 billion versus Apple's $540 billion. They're playing the 500 and some odd billion dollar game against each other, and they keep trading places. But.
And then Gmail, I guess they just hit 1 billion active users. I thought that was interesting. Gmail feels so old to me, but, you know, they're still, that still was an important milestone for them
absolutely.
To reach. And it's surprising that it took them so long. And it's also interesting to me because email seems to be like, we don't think about it that much.
No.
You know, sort of on the way out, it's like, you know, we use all these different, I know kids these days don't even use email at all, which is interesting.
Understand.
And we spent... The show I do earlier, we talked a lot about Snapchat, and that's where everything is. And, you know, it's like a lot of these places, businesses are really focused on the next generation. But I guess Gmail is still a thing.
Yeah. Lots of ads being, you know, channeled in to the Gmail experience. So having a billion users being exposed to those ads, that's a pretty significant, you know, significant thing to Google's bottom line.
Mm-hmm. So. Or one user for every message in my inbox, I think.
Exactly. It does seem to be becoming the more popular email program, too, I think, where it had more competition from Yahoo and Hotmail. Mm-hmm. And you know, now it's-
I know it's funny. Like every once in a while, I'll meet someone or get their email address and it's like a Hotmail address. And almost always like I'll reply back and be like, so still on Yahoo Mail, you know, or whatever those other ones are. Like my Yahoo Mail is just inundated, like crazily inundated with spam and everything like that. But hey, you find the one that works for you. Gmail happens to work for me. But
the lawyer who drew up my wife and my will, our last will and testament, has a Hotmail account. And I was like, honey, are you sure?
is he reputable? I mean, right. don't mean to disparage, you know, because Hotmail, it's still an email service that a lot of people use. But yes, less and less you see that. And I feel like, man, by and large, these days, you see the Gmail.
Mm-hmm. So our next headline is one that doesn't probably mean what you think it means. It did not mean what I thought it meant when I read it this morning. PC Magazine reports that the first Xiaomi phones will be available soon in the United States. Now, Xiaomi is a Chinese company, sells high-end phones for reasonable prices, but they were technically available only in China. And according to PC Mag, the first Xiaomi phones will be available from U.S. Mobile in the U.S., but there's a few notable things, a few notable caveats with this. They don't support LTE. They're not being offered by Xiaomi. What exactly is going on here, Jason?
Well, I mean, Xiaomi in particular, but it's also Xiaomi and Meizu, which is another kind of low-cost Chinese manufacturer. So they're both being carried by U.S. Mobile. When you look at it at the onset, you're like, oh, wow, you know, they have ambitions to get in the U.S. market. This is a big deal because now suddenly you can buy them legitimately through, you know, a carrier. It's a carrier deal or whatever. But it's not actually that. It's being imported just the way that you or I would go online and find an importer of these devices and order it. They're doing it through a company called Omni Electronics HK, Hong Kong, I'm assuming. So they're not even doing this directly with Huawei or anything like that. There is no, as far as I could tell, any direct relationship with Huawei. So, or sorry, not Huawei, sorry, Xiaomi. Sorry, I get them confused apparently. Huawei, total market in the U.S. They're one of the few that are. That
and
are
the Huawei are the cheaper. Xiaomi. They're cheaper, like cheaper, more cheaperly made.
Yeah, they're kind of on the same playing field, right? Like they're kind of lower cost improved hardware. But Xiaomi, I mean, I have the Xiaomi Mi 3. This is one of the phones that's going to be carried through the U.S. mobile kind of plan. You got to really ask yourself, though, because the prices are really low, right? So that's kind of part of the reason that they're doing it, also to kind of set themselves apart. But, I mean, you get, you don't get Google services on these out of the box. And from what I understand, since these are just being straight up imported, you know, it's still going to be tailored for the Chinese market, not to mention all the lack of bands and everything to really kind of support LTE. It doesn't support LTE at all and has limited support of T-Mobile's bands here in the U.S. So I don't know if it's necessarily the big deal. I think they're just kind of doing it to say that they did it. What do you think, Omar?
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, when you look at how crashy and burny Microsoft's phone business is these days, it's kind of nice to have some alternative to iOS and Android, to have somebody out there that's doing something that's gaining some kind of traction, because clearly it's not Microsoft.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess it could be testing grounds. You know, I guess you could watch it and see like how many of these are going to sell and everything. One question I do have, though, about this is that regularly the kind of discussion around Xiaomi coming to the U.S. just to single them out always ends up on, yeah, but, you know, they're going to encounter issues from a design and patent perspective because their designs are so closely matched to, you know, companies like Apple and other companies. A lot of qualities of these look so close that people fear that if they come to the U.S., they're going to be, you know, facing a huge backlash in the form of legal, you know, wrangling and have to pay through the teeth in order to do that ultimately. So that would deter them from doing that. So if a company like US Mobile is doing this officially through their service, does that end up making them liable for the same things? I mean, Xiaomi isn't approachable because they're not actually doing this officially, but is US Mobile? What do you guys think?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. It also begs the question, like, do phone makers need to sell in the United States? You know, I mean,
they need this market?
Yeah, I mean, like with China. Market, I mean, there are a lot of people in China, sure. You know, who need phones.
Sure.
And so, yeah, like we tend to think, like, well, they're not available in the United States. So, you know, so what? But I mean, that's really very ethnocentric of us to say, you know, it's like, I think they're doing fine. So I don't know.
I mean, I know Hugo Barra of Xiaomi has said that ultimately, eventually, they would like to kind of get that entrance into the U.S. in some way. But they've got a lot of hurdles to overcome. Mm-hmm. So, well, Omar, speaking of Microsoft, think of Microsoft as the company that might put the cloud in the ocean. Just think about that for a second. The company is prototyping a data center that can exist hundreds of feet below the ocean's surface. It's codenamed Project Natick or
Natick.
Natick.
I'm guessing Natick.
Natick, like NATO. Okay.
Or
right.
Like Natick. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like NATO.
Who knows? Natick. There you go. You figure it out. It solves a number of problems with that are traditionally seen on data centers. Primarily, you know, you need to keep them cool, and the ocean is an abundant source of cool water to, you know, kind of eliminate the need for air conditioning. They can be paired with turbines that'll capture the energy just from the ocean current, turn that into electricity. And they've done a lot of studies of this to make sure that they aren't then heating the ocean if they have a number of these pods throughout, because, you know, that could change the dynamics of the ocean and ocean life and all that kind of stuff if it's significant. They say it doesn't at all, or within like a couple of feet maybe. But even that kind of sounds potentially significant if you've got this massive amount of these pods everywhere. Very cool stuff, though. Very forward-thinking. I don't know. Does this float your boat? What do you think?
Well, it does seem like it's not the most environmentally friendly project, but, I mean, they've got to go somewhere. And an interesting point that John Markoff makes in this is that data centers are usually, like land data centers, are away from urban areas.
Right.
Whereas these would, I mean, many of the big cities, obviously the coastal cities, are near oceans. So they would maybe be closer to the data center. So I think that part of it was interesting.
Yeah, if you have friends that live in Hawaii and ask them about online gaming, their ping is terrible because there's nothing, you know, they're having to connect to West Coast servers. So, yeah, this would definitely solve a lot of problems with latency. My favorite part of that story is the Microsoft engineer who's like, When I first heard about this, I thought, electricity and water? What? I don't think that's a real story. Yeah,
it did seem like something that, you know, was written by a marketing person and handed to him to say to the New York Times reporter that shows up at his doorstep to talk about this. Yeah.
Find this. Okay.
My favorite part was that the testing, they've got some pods that they've been testing, and one is called Leona Philpott, who Halo fans might know as a character from Halo. So she was returned in good condition and
had some barnacles attached.
Some barnacles, yes. And they're using pressurized nitrogen to remove the heat from the chips. Also interesting.
That's cool. Yeah, the pods are meant to last up to 5 years untouched. So obviously, I mean, that's for the outside, and I guess they have to design the inside and the electrical components, you know, and the computers and servers and all that, so that they can stand the test of time, so they don't have to lift those and pop them open. And deployment for data centers could drop from 2 years to 90 days going to this kind of method. And hey, we have a lot of ocean floor, so at some point. These could be littering, you know, littered throughout the entire floor of the ocean. Who knows?
Yeah. So, and we've got some back and forth in the chat room. Seemed like Gadget Hog says it should be Nautic. True, like Nautic instead of Natick. But I was thinking Natick. My grandfather was from Natick. And Patrick, yeah. Who's our web engineer, also said he used to live near Natick. He thinks it's Natick, too. So
there we go. I like this. I think it's interesting. I mean, I don't think the fear is that these are going to end up covering every foot, you know, every foot of the ocean floor. Environmentally, I don't, you know, that probably would never happen. And not to mention, it's a huge amount of space that you're considering. But there are concerns as far as the environmental aspect of this is concerned, I suppose.
Right. Yeah. There'll be some coral left. Let's hope.
Please, please.
Well, a new study from the Harvard Berkman Center for the Internet and Society says that those encryption policies from big companies like Apple and Google are not as much of a hindrance to law enforcement catching terrorists and criminals as that law enforcement would have us believe. In fact, all those new technologies we're embracing, from the smart fridge that I love so much to fitness trackers, actually offer the government all kinds of new ways to track us. So as the study says, don't panic.
Don't panic. Everything in your house is tracking you.
Don't panic, government. We're, you know, encryption is not going to keep you from needing to know what you need to know about the bad guys, which is something that we've sort of said on the show for a long time. But now Harvard proved it.
Yeah, I have an Amazon Echo in my house, and I'm sure the government knows everything about my kids listening to Kids Bop every day.
Oh, no, not Kids Bop. Yeah. You don't want them to know that. Yeah, I mean, it also kind of points out that, you know, tech companies like Google, Apple, they're very used to kind of dealing with both the subpoena aspect of things and also kind of tightening security around the products that we're using. Obviously, they're kind of on the hunt to lock it down more and kind of standardize encryption across the board and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to these Internet of Things, you know, when you're talking toasters, light bulbs, cameras, toothbrushes, door locks, however deep it goes, a lot of these companies could be a lot easier to subpoena for information. And that information, I mean, I don't know how much information you're going to get from a connected toothbrush, but I suppose I'm not the one that's devising the plan and pulling information. I think the more places you're getting that kind of data from, the more valuable it is. And so that could potentially be a big issue down the line. And I'm thinking, hey, why don't we encrypt everything? Apparently everything needs to be encrypted, even your toothbrush.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like, I mean, I was surprised in that article that iCloud is not in any way encrypted. I thought there was something going on there that was encrypted, and apparently
no kidding.
Not.
No kidding. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe we'll have encrypted toothbrushes someday. Samsung sent out invites for its yearly event at Mobile World Congress, where it's expected to unveil its next generation of premium Android smartphones, the S7 series, the Galaxy S7 series. This is kind of what they do every year at Mobile World Congress. Samsung didn't specifically say that they're unveiling, aside from the Galaxy note down at the bottom, but they didn't specifically say, you know, it's going to be these phones. But this is pretty much what they do every year. The S7, the S7 Edge, and possibly a larger S7 Edge Plus, of course, to be unveiled. Rumors are pointing to the return of the micro SD card slot. Mm. on the iOS side of things, is there ever a discussion around micro SD card slots? There isn't, right? Because they just don't exist on Apple devices.
There's only a discussion when you have something and they take it away from you.
Okay. All right.
Because I had the S5. I had the S5 or the S4. I had an S phone, and the last one maybe with the SD card, and it was great. And then when I got an iPhone, I was like, I really missed it, and then I realized I didn't really miss it at all.
Because you're fine with the cloud.
Yes.
And just having it and all.
It's all when they put it underwater. It's
and potentially under the ocean. Yes.
And I guess we're going to see some sort of version of a Force Touch. Maybe they'll probably call it Samsung Touch or something like that.
Yeah.
That would be comparable to the iPhone.
Yeah. Samsung likes to do a lot of the software things. And I think, yes. So Omar, do you have an iOS device? Do you have one of the newer iOS devices? Or are you?
I do. I have a 6. My wife has a 6S. And the last Samsung I used significantly was probably maybe the first 6 that came out.
I mean, is the... Force Touch thing, like something that everybody has to jump onto, or did it end up just kind of being a gimmick more than anything?
Yeah, my wife has it on her phone, and I don't think she's ever used it except when we're in the store, and I was like, look, this is what Force Touch is, and then never to be used again.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not a feature for her, and she's a pretty casual user. I don't know if power users are using it to sort their email better or do the image sorting better, but I don't have it on mine. I have a 6, and I don't feel like I'm missing much.
There you go.
I use it for one very specific thing, and that's if someone's giving me their phone number, it's easy just to press hard, and then it's like add contact. For some reason, that's the only, because it's one of those moments where you want to do it fast, and then,
Yeah, totally. As long as it doesn't overcomplicate. So, and that's kind of what Samsung does. It kind of monitors to see what everybody else is doing, or it's developing it at the same exact time. Sometimes that's what they want you to believe. It will also probably, I'm guessing, have the Snapdragon 820. Qualcomm recently made a deal with Samsung to have it create the chip for Qualcomm, exclusively. So I'd be very surprised if Samsung doesn't have that inside the phone. And then, kind of shifting gears a little bit. The Gear 360 is possibly going to be shown. This is a product that we've seen before, but hasn't been released. It captures 360-degree images with this multi-camera saucer-shaped design that you see on the screen right now. So that would be cool. Samsung's got a little bit of the VR stuff going with their Samsung devices. So this would kind of tap into that. Maybe even beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, we're doing live coverage of that. This is February 21st, 10 a.m. Pacific. I'm going to be on hand with Leo to do some live coverage of that event. So stay tuned for that.
Excellent. Well, if you want to figure out the best way to shoot people across the earth in a pod, you can ask Reddit, of course. More on that after the break. But first, let's take a minute to thank NatureBox. NatureBox is the AAA of snacks. Now, a few weeks ago, we showed you all of our favorite NatureBox snacks. You still apparently have the box. But when I went back here, someone stole my box.
I don't know. I'm finding some hummus in here. Oh, so is this your box?
That must be my box.
Or the hummus changed because it has my name on it. And I didn't order the hummus. So there's been some Nature Box shenanigans going on.
I think because I went to look for my snacks and I could not find any of my snacks. Who took them?
I don't know. I'm thinking I might have to hold on to the classic hummus. So
I'll
I'm sorry,
share them
you're not
with
getting
you.
That back.
So Nature Box snacks are always the first to get stolen because they taste good and they are not full of garbage as other snacks sometimes are. When hunger strikes, do not reach for that half-eaten bag of chips. Steal the smart and delicious snacks from NatureBox that were supposed to be for your coworker. All of NatureBox's snacks are made with high-quality ingredients that you can trust. And trying to eat healthier does not mean giving up on flavor. They have vegan, no sugar added, and non-GMO options. You can also choose between savory and sweet, salty and tart. Choose from over 100 unique and tasty options like blueberry, almond, quinoa bites. Everybody loves quinoa. I love quinoa, and it's awesome in a snack. Good protein. And coffee kettle popcorn. Plus, you can fill out your snack profile and get personalized recommendations based on your preferences, which I thought would keep people from stealing mine. But apparently, we have
everybody likes your picks.
Everyone likes my preferences. The best part, NatureBox delivers right to your door. I will get them sent home from now on, no longer to the office where they can be stolen.
Smart.
Fuel your game engine with healthy snacks. Visit naturebox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now. That's naturebox.com/twit. Go there, get 50% off your first box of delicious personalized snacks. sent directly to your doorstep.
And might I recommend mini Belgian waffles? Probably one of my absolute favorite things on their little menu. So good that I had to eat it. And then I realized I'm taking the next segment, so if I don't eat it fast, I'm going to be the guy that's introducing somebody with a Belgian waffle.
Right. Talking about Hyperloop, eating mini Belgian waffles.
You know.
You stole them, Burke.
Oh, Burke stole them. Okay.
All right.
Fired.
I forgive you.
All right. We have Fred Lambert, writer at Electrek, on the show with us today to talk a little bit about the Hyperloop. Welcome to the show, Fred. How's it going?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks for
The Hyperloop. The Hyperloop is a mass transit, high speed mass transit system. And this weekend, SpaceX held the design weekend of the pod competition. So the competition just to create the pod that will go inside the tube for the whole system as well. But the idea behind the Hyperloop is to create a low pressure environment similar to what you'll find in a high altitude aircraft. So they operate in an environment that's low pressure and little air resistance. So you want to recreate this environment on the ground, and that take the shape of a long tube that is near vacuum, at 99.8% vacuum, and you can get to extremely high speed in that. But you have to have a powerful pod to sustain that type of speed and to brake and so on. So SpaceX created that competition to try to find as many possible design and the propulsion system to make that a reality.
Wow. And so who got involved? Because I know there were a lot of teams involved in this competition, and who walked away kind of with the biggest pat on the back, I suppose.
Well, you have there was other teams that submitted a design package to SpaceX, mm-hmm. but they selected before this weekend, they selected 124 teams. And out of the 124, they picked 23 winners. Most of them are for teams from student teams, from schools, from universities. The top honors went to the MIT. But for the non-student team, actually it's a crowdsourced team from Reddit that took the highest honor for the non-student team.
Was Reddit the only non-student team that was there?
No. You had about 40 to 50 teams that were
non-student. Okay, wow. All right. Go Reddit.
But were they the only crowdsourced team?
Good question. I'm not sure. I would say that. But they are the only crowdsourced team that I know that won the competition. That technically were declared winner of the competition.
Is there anything that Reddit can't do?
No.
what made MIT's submission kind of stand out from the rest?
Well, they didn't release too much details about each of the designs, and probably know more closer to once they build the prototypes. The MIT released a video of the design, but it's mainly to try to get sponsors, and they don't reveal too much because it's still a competition and you don't want your competitors to know your design.
That's true.
But they went with a levitation design because SpaceX give the instruction, they give broad instruction, they didn't need nothing too precise to leave the teams to get as many diverse designs as possible. And so you can get a design on wheels to get on the track, or you can go with a magnetic levitation system, like a maglev string. And the MIT team went with a levitation system, a bit like the Hendo hoverboard that we saw last year, or was it the year before? And so it's a similar system that will levitate the pod from the track. But other than that, it's we don't know much more about them, their design. But it was enough to impress SpaceX and Tesla engineers.
Yeah, obviously. So what is the next phase for the competition for those who are advancing?
Well, now they were awarded about $250,000 in price in between them. And they'll use that money and some sponsors to create the actual prototypes. It's still smaller. It's not a full-scale prototype, but they will have to build it. And they will race it at the track, at the SpaceX test track, which should be under construction any day now. And they aim to be ready this summer, probably around June.
Wow. Now, Elon Musk himself surprised the crowd during the event. He showed up to kind of talk with everyone towards the end. What exactly did he have to kind of share with everyone in the audience? I know he kind of gave a few of the rules on the next phase and everything, but was there anything that really stood out?
Yeah, well, he pretty much tried to get everyone excited about the race itself. And made it sound like it's going to be an exciting event. And he revealed pretty much how the race will go on. That will be the goal is to get the highest speed possible, but it's only a mile or a mile and a half. The track it will end up being, it's going to be at the SpaceX headquarters, so it's in the middle of Los Angeles. There's not that much space. So he even said that he's going to build a foam pit at the end so that the pods can you can maybe retrieve some pieces of the pod if they don't manage to break in time.
Right, yeah. But breaking is obviously a big part of this. Like you can make a vehicle go really super fast, but you got to also make it stop and not kill the people that are riding inside potentially.
Yeah, that's the goal, yeah. So he also added that he said that he thinks that might actually happen because when he first introduced the concept, he wanted to spur the interest in a new mode of transportation. Since we were stuck with four modes of transportation since quite a while now, so we wanted to create a new one. If it's the airport loop, that's great. If not, well, at least we have interest in innovation in the transportation system. And now he believes that might actually happen because of all the interest the company saw with the design competition, the pod design competition, but around it, a bunch of other companies are now creating commercial ventures to try to bring the Hyperloop to market.
Wow, that's really cool.
So, Frederick, you write for Electrek, which is part of 9to5 Mac and 9to5 Google. Tell us a little bit about Electrek and what you guys cover over there.
We cover the transition between the fossil fuel transportation industry to electric. So everything around that. So it's going to be electric vehicle. It's going to be the Hyperloop, since the Hyperloop is actually electric. It's going to be powered by batteries and solar power on top of the track itself. And we cover, of course, if you want to change the industry to being battery powered, you're going to have to change also the energy industry. So you want to change the power consumption, so electric vehicles, and you want to change the power generation with moving again away from fossil fuel and to renewables and renewable energy.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Fred, for coming on. Actually, before we go, did Elon tell us when we're going to be colonizing Mars? Did he happen to give us any information or time frame on that?
He gave a time frame last week. He said that, well, not colonization, but when SpaceX thinks SpaceX is going to send someone on Mars, and he said 2025.
Okay. Well, mark it in stone then, apparently. Fred Lambert, really appreciate you coming on the show to talk with us today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Well, we got an email from Raul. He writes, I was just listening to episode 1437 and heard the discussion about Lyft's surge pricing. A Lyft driver told Shannon Morse that prices go up during peak demand times to encourage drivers to get out on the road. And Raul says that explanation just didn't sit well with me. If Lyft were really trying to encourage drivers to get out on the road, they would give the driver the entire fare above the standard rate. The fact that Lyft and Uber happily take their cut based on the entire inflated price shows that they're just trying to make more money. I guess I shouldn't blame a company for trying to make more money. I just think they shouldn't lie about it. Mm. What I would really like to see as a company in their business, what I would really like them to do is to stop calling themselves a technology company while acting like a taxi company. The difference in my mind is a technology platform that was really just trying to connect riders to drivers would create a free and open market instead of trying to control the market. Riders should be able to virtually hail a taxi. Drivers should see that request and enter a bid. And the rider should see those bids in real time and select one based on price, ratings, etc. That would create more of a free market. Fares would still go up. If demand outstrips supply, which is expected in a free market, drivers would be in control of their fares and it would put an end to the driver-contractor debate. Thank you, Raul from San Antonio. This was an interesting email. We go back and forth a lot with this. And I, when you guys were talking about this, I was actually out of town. And I think your Lyft or Uber driver is basically the And you can always interview them because you're always in a car with them. I always have conversations whenever I'm in a car. And I had a Lyft driver who also is an Uber driver. And like, so he's sort of playing that game too. But, you know, this was a week ago where Uber lowered their prices and then Lyft lowered their prices. And I spoke to him about that. And yes, that comes right out of his, you know, money. Like, you know, it's not, he doesn't get a choice. So it's interesting. I don't know if it's as easy as Raul says. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think maybe Raul has a little business idea that he needs to kind of go forth with. He's kind of got it figured out here. Or at least he's got a competitor figured out, you know, some sort of alternative.
Yeah, my big problem with both companies, and we're having a lot of things going on here in Austin with city council and with this fingerprinting issue with Lyft and Uber. So that's kind of top of mind. But ride sharing is still a term that I kind of despise that is still being thrown around. But there's no sharing.
No.
Nobody is going somewhere and you just happen to catch a Lyft there.
Oh, hey, I guess I'll pick you up then.
Totally.
You're right.
Like, you pay for a ride, it's not sharing.
Yeah, right. It is true. Interesting. What's the fingerprint thing going on in Austin? I don't know if I'm aware of this.
Our Austin City Council has proposed a measure that would require Uber and Lyft to fingerprint their drivers, and they have been fighting that tooth and nail. They've been threatening to leave town. They're already doing it in Houston, but apparently in Austin it would be more expensive for them. So they have actually generated a petition that generated, I think, 63,000 signatures to put it on a ballot where people could vote for it, for them not to do fingerprinting in Austin.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing where, you know, with no oversight from Uber or Lyft, then, you know, you worry about the drivers, you know, and some accountability there. But right now it doesn't really feel like there necessarily is accountability. I don't know. It's complicated.
Mm-hmm. And the cab companies here are required to do fingerprinting. So this would kind of put them on the same level. But no, but, you know, Uber and Lyft, of course, do not want to do that.
Right. Yeah. Because they're not the same thing.
But I mean, I wonder if that is. But I did not get a chance to actually look to see if that was accurate. Like, is that accurate that Uber does put it? I mean, I guess it's what he's saying. It's what they say. Uber says, we're going to, you know, raise prices so that more drivers come out.
Yeah, they did actually mention that. I remember that from the story where it was basically their rationale was, the drivers will make up the difference based on the higher demand because of the lower price. So it'll be like, oh, well, you know, it's not as expensive. So more people are going to ride. Therefore, you're going to be doing more rides and you're going to make more money in the long term was kind of their argument on that. But I don't know. It's kind of a convenient argument.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting, too, because, you know, if it's rain, like if you're in New York City, if it's raining, you know, there's going to be more demand. So that drivers go out and they, you know, I guess it's an economics problem. Mm-hmm. If you want to make a certain amount of money as a driver and then, you know, you make more money, you're going to be out less time, right? Like, so, you know, if your goal was to make $100 and there's more demand, then you make your $100 and you go home and then you're no longer out on the road. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't make sense. Then people can't get a cab.
But they're not going to want to stop. They're just going to want to drive and drive and drive. They're going to want to share those rides.
Here in town, there are certain times you know not to order an Uber. It's like ACL Festival. If it's New Year's Eve, you know it's going to be a $200 or $300, you know, for a couple of city blocks ride.
South by Southwest. I mean, yeah, you could just be an Uber driver in Austin for those couple weeks and then retire, right?
Yeah. Buy a little island in Hawaii. Hope that Microsoft builds something near you so you have ping. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, coming up, what do you do when you want a water ski and all you have is a bunch of snow and a quadcopter? Mm-hmm. Chew on that for a minute, and we're going to take some time to thank the sponsor. I'm sure you can come up with a couple of ideas. We'll show you one of those ideas in a second. But first, let's thank FreshBooks. If you are a freelancer or you run a small business, chances are your least favorite part is, you know, kind of rummaging through the receipts, trying to keep track of all of your expenses, creating, formatting, sending invoices, and the worst, tracking down customers who don't pay you on time. FreshBooks is the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of businesses just like yours the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. I've done some music work myself on the side here and there, and my least favorite part is the billing aspect. I like getting paid, of course, but sending over the invoice, tracking the payment, all that kind of stuff is so far removed from what I enjoy about that kind of work. That's kind of a drag. So FreshBooks makes all that stuff kind of a lot easier for many reasons. First of all, getting started on FreshBooks could not be easier, even if you're not a numbers person. You'll be creating, sending invoices in minutes. You'll get paid online right away with FreshBooks payments, and you get paid up front. So now you can request a deposit in FreshBooks. No more covering costs out of pocket or waiting until the end of a project to get paid. Plus, FreshBooks recently announced their new card reader, so you can accept credit cards wherever business happens to take you, quickly, securely, right from your iPhone in less than a minute. FreshBooks card reader is EMV, that's chip card enabled, the new standard in the U.S., seeing them everywhere now. With their entirely redesigned iPhone app, you can conduct business wherever you happen to be. You can send an estimate right after the handshake, send an invoice in seconds right on your phone. It's so easy to track all your billable time. And now you're going to know how long your projects actually take. You can throw away the shoebox that you're, you know, keeping all of your expenses and tracking them in that old antiquated way. Track expenses on the spot using your phone's camera. And all this allows you to focus on what you love the most, growing your business. You'll wonder why you didn't start with FreshBooks sooner. If you have questions, help is free forever. You can always count on FreshBooks award-winning support rock stars to go above and beyond whenever you need a hand. Getting started simple. It's totally free for 30 days. Go to FreshBooks.com/TNT. Don't forget to enter Tech News Today in the How Did You Hear About Us section so that they know that we sent you. Start your 30-day free trial today. And we thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode of Tech News Today. All right, TNT's fan of the day is Eleuterio. Okay, I'm really striking out on the names. Eleuterio, Mr. Martinez, who says, how I listen to you guys. Thanks for providing good content, along with a picture of Tech News Today playing from a smartwatch. I'm pretty sure it's the LG G Watch R. My co-host and All About Android calls it the Guatcher. So anyways, there you are. We're playing on a watch.
Does it have a speaker? Does it like you?
I don't think the Watch R has a speaker, so it's probably, you know, just controlling from the watch. Oh, okay. It probably has headphones or actual speaker in the room or something. Okay. But you can do it from your watch. Isn't that cool? Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video. Take a picture of yourself and your setup. Post it to Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we're going to find it. We got a ton over the weekend. Like, okay. we have a small collection. We could release a book, a photo book of people.
We should do that. Before I go on, I wanted to thank user 21952 in the chat room. I think what I was clumsily trying to explain was the backward bending supply curve of labor with Uber. I don't want to take credit for this. It's an economic theory, and I think I was getting the Uber idea from maybe Freakonomics podcast, or
okay.
It could have been the TED Radio Hour. I have a lot of podcasts in my brain, so I will do some more research. But there is something there. There is an economic concept that is longstanding. So thank you, user 21982, and
thank
give
you
yourself
chatters.
A name so that I can actually thank you.
He's like, no, that is my name.
Okay.
From birth.
Yeah, says it on his economics
do you
degree.
Like it?
All right. Finally, we have a virtual colony of drone stories today. The first is from our friend Mike Murphy over at Quartz. It's about a new sport that is sweeping Russia, apparently, drone boarding. Yes, it is exactly what it looks like. I think maybe we can take a look at the video. That is a small child being pulled along, as in kiteboarding, with a drone. I don't know. I think that, I don't know what, a quadcopter.
Yeah.
I think it's a homemade quadcopter. I looked into it. It doesn't look like...
The blistering speeds of drone boarding.
Not real.
Buckle up.
This
is extreme sports right here. He's got a Dr. Pepper in his pocket.
Yeah, we have the ability
or a Mountain
to play
Dew
that.
In his pocket, and he's going fast. Yeah, I don't know.
How do you know that's a he?
That's true. It's a he. That entity is being
that
pulled
small
by
child,
a quadcopter.
By that drone that lasted. They actually probably took this video in like 15 takes or something because the battery kept going out. I don't know. Omar, what do you think about drone boarding?
Okay, I have a Parrot drone, like one of the first ones from a few generations ago. If I attach a paperclip to it, it crashes. Like, there's no weight on it whatsoever. I tried to put a phone on it once, and it was just, like, all over the place. Yeah, I'm impressed that it can pull anything, much less a child.
So, okay, so then I have to think about this. So the kid is holding on to the drone that is pulling him, and there is somebody...
Or her.
Somebody, Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks. Thank you for the correction.
He must have slicked up the snow or something, so he really, like, kind of coasted.
Yeah, it's like you kind of got a little bit of a downhill. You got to do a little bit of a downhill so you can get a little bit faster speeds. And then you have to have someone that you trust at the controls of the drone.
Right.
Don't give that control to just anybody.
It's no Hyperloop, I will say that.
Oh, no.
So then, what's going to happen when you're there? You're drone boarding. You're flying across the snow, having a good old time. When all of a sudden, out of thin air, an eagle swoops past you and latches onto that drone and flies away with it. What then happens? And we have video of that. It's true. Check this out. These are eagles that are trained to take down drones. And so then, you're not being pulled by the quadcopter. You're being pulled by the eagle that's flying away with a quadcopter. This is a strange world we're about to live in. I don't know if I'm ready for it.
I don't know. I think it's birds are amazing.
That's one way to put it, yeah.
I had not seen that before. That's amazing.
I just think it's a strange, strange world. We're going to be doing our extreme drone sports, and a bird's going to come along and thwart our dreams.
Well, I mean, that is one way to... You know, it's probably better than shooting them down in your backyard with your gun.
The drones, not the...
The drones.
Okay.
Shooting the drones down. Right. I don't eat birds, so...
All right.
Drone jammers.
Yeah. That's so, true. Yeah, it's probably safer than shooting down the drones.
Right, because that's, I mean, that's how some people get rid of drones. They take it into their own hands. So, yeah, just train your falcon.
Train your eagle that you have, that you own.
But no, that's what drone boarding should be. The
eagle.
Yeah, if the eagle is carrying the drone,
eagle
then,
boarding
then
is
we have something
way more impressive than
drone boarding.
Artemis.
Yes. I feel like this has been foretold in plenty of literature.
Yes.
Lots of literature for us. Okay, we'll see which one wins, drones or eagles. I'm not really quite sure. Thanks so much for coming on, Omar. Tell people kind of, I don't know, where to find you, what you're working on, social networks, all that kind of stuff. What do you want people to know?
Oh, thank you. This was so much fun. Right now I just had a story that's in tomorrow's paper, the Uber of, where I kind of put a couple of companies together that are trying to do the Uber of, you know, matching roommates or doing things like taking temperatures of people and making health data out of that for cities. So that's something that I've been working on. And I've also got, you know, pre-South by Southwest stuff coming up. I'm Omar G on Twitter. I am at the Austin 360 Digital Savant blog at austin360.com/digital savant. And the Statesman Shots podcast is statesman.com/shots. And we have a lot of fun with my co-host Tali Mosley, who's fantastic.
Omar, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, good to see y'all. Great.
Take care.
We know we've reached a point when we have the Uber of Uber ofs.
Yeah.
The Uber of Uber ofs.
Right. Exactly.
I can hardly say that. Tomorrow's guest is going to be Liberty Madison. She's that tech girl online, and we're super stoked to invite her on.
Yeah, she tweeted that she's going to be talking about tech for millennials, I hate to break it to you. We're going to be talking about all the tech for millennials, for old people, for young
people. She's got the millennial perspective.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be bringing that.
Yes, she will.
TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can always be a part of the show, of course, by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv, or you can leave us a short voicemail. That's 260-TNT-SHOW. You can hit the show up on Twitter. We are at Tech News Today TV.
I also have a little secret for you. You can subscribe to our newsletter.
Oh, I need that.
You can sign up at twit.tv/newsletter. Jason and I together wrote a piece about tech news today. It appears that only I got credit for writing it. So
that's okay. It's okay. I'm a ghostwriter.
If you got the newsletter, it was both of us. We both wrote it. So we write for the newsletter, and others here also do. And you can find out who our guests and who guests on other shows are going to be.
Yeah.
So sign up for that. And also subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn. And if you know someone who might be interested in the show, have them subscribe too. Or if you need to push them a little farther, you can send some of our clips on Facebook. You can share them. So go to facebook.com/technewstodaytv show or just search for Tech News Today on Facebook. Find us, share some of our shows to see if they would like to subscribe too. All the ways to subscribe are at twit.tv/TN2. And if you want to get in touch with me directly, you can hit me up on Twitter. I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thank you to everyone who does this show, including Anthony Nielsen, who is behind the controls, pushing buttons, making us look good. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We will see y'all tomorrow. Bye, guys.
You're running out.